bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Hello, friends. How are you?
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. That's me speaking.
So, we had another sighting here in LA of Mr. Jetpack.
Oh, wait. Now we have a few jetpacks. This isn't the Rescue Ranger jetpack guy, right?
This is the Rocketeer. This is an airplane up at altitude that says, hey, yeah, we see a guy on a jetpack.
At LAX. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So this is the planes are reporting the fact that there is a guy with a jetpack flying around, and we have seen yet another sighting of this.
Yeah. And this is how a Marvel movie begins.
Yeah, quite literally. I believe that's a scene in the first Iron Man movie. Yeah. that the like the F-16s or whatever don't know what they're looking at. Like, it looks like a guy.
And we're assuming it's a jetpack. I mean, what if it's a dude that can fly with a backpack?
Yeah, that's right. Who's got some bruise in the back? He's like, hey, man, it's a 6-hour journey.
So we're making some assumptions here, everybody. Media hasn't proven conclusively that it is a jetpack that is making this man fly. So we can just say flying man and cover all bases. Or flying person. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I guess I guess I'm okay with it. The more the merrier. I mean, you know, you do you, whoever you are with the jetpack or
6,000 feet in the air. Good God. Yeah. That's very high in the air.
I mean, at the very least, I get that high, my backpack is going to have a parachute in it.
And just like in the movies, there's now an FBI command center in some hangar where they're trying to track down the mysterious flying man, you know, and they got radar and stuff. Here, it's like sitting on some guy's desk, like, another one. Anyhow, what's for lunch?
They're like, as long as he's not shooting at planes, that's fine by me. Yeah.
I mean, would presume that this should be something that is high priority, right? Because let's say he does blow up a plane from a foreign country. Like, now that's an international incident, right?
Yeah, when he's up there with this guy, a shotgun, you know, like now if 2020 wasn't already so damn weird, this would be a big news. There'd be a task force there. But here we're like, yeah, of course. Oh, tentacle monster in Hudson Bay? Sure, why not? You know, giant squid found in a swimming pool? Okay, cool, whatevs.
Yeah. I mean, to the future, it's as weird as we feared / hoped.
Yeah, I can't imagine that this is a problem that's going to go away. Like, yes, this guy has a jetpack. Like, there does need to be some level of, like, enforcement of, like, all right, we're just going to get people with a bunch of other ideas on how they're going to propel themselves up into, you know, our plane landing areas. And then that eventually it's going to be a major problem, right?
I would imagine that, you know, as part of Moore's law, we're going to have AI and stuff that makes them literally idiot proof, where everybody will have their own bubble and nobody can invade somebody else's personal space. And you'll probably have idiots like trying to race towards each other, trying to bounce off of each other as the AI algorithms, you know, keep them at least 300 yards apart or whatever.
That'd be a best case, is then it's sort of just easy to use it. But I have suspects for you.
Oh, got it.
Let's go. List them off.
Okay. Well, here, no, like I got legit. I got a lineup for you, like a real legit lineup for you. Okay.
First two have to be Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. And
I literally have suspects for you. Okay. I literally have actual people who digging. Turns out that there is a company in Southern California which has jetpacks. And they also offer like a jetpack school which, by the way, Brian, I think you need to do. And I want you to take a look at these. These are the people at Jetpack Aviation. You're looking at a video now of some of our suspects who have access to. And then when we go, after we're done with this, I want to show you, go to the main page. There's a photo there of a lineup. And I want you to take a look and see who you think. But here we're looking at David Mayman, founder, chief pilot.
So, you know, these jetpacks are the traditional, like they're shooting out just blasts of air, essentially, or I guess they're really
they're turbines. Truly... Those are gas turbines. Okay, those are gas turbines.
Okay, man, how long do you get in these?
I believe it. You can get a 1 or 2 day course.
Oh, sorry. I mean, how long in the air before you run out of fuel?
Oh, yeah.
Like 15 minutes or so, I think. So the way they do this, the way they train you is they actually have this tethered system. So you strap this on, Modern Rogue, and what you do is you start this thing up and you start to hover, Modern Rogue, and you're able to sort of float around this course in a safe way, which is Modern Rogue.
That is pretty amazing.
So the idea is...
This video is over a year old, too, and it only has 33,000 views. It's a school where you learn to fly a jetpack.
Yeah. All right. So
go to the page. Bryce, go to the page. I want to show you there's a lineup here. Scroll down just a little bit. Stop right there. Just go down so we can see their faces.
It does look like it's got to be that dude in the middle who's mugging for the camera, yes. Right?
Hey Wally, where was the jetpack last night?
That's amazing.
What are the odds that it's going to be one of these people?
100%.
Yeah, I mean, if
Vegas
the area,
isn't even taking action. Do we know where it is? Wait. Do we have an address for this? Can we chart it to LAX? Because that's what I'm curious. Like, are they taking? Are they taking a car down to like someplace around where LAX is? Are they right by LAX to the point where they could, like, is this a new model that they're like testing?
I also would imagine that it's roughly, I mean, you're allowed to fly a hang glider without telling nobody, and you could ride thermals up really high or do paragliding or any of that stuff. So I'd imagine, you know, you don't have to call the airports and say, watch out, I'm going to look cooler than those other guys flying in the same airspace.
I'm pretty sure you do. Yes.
Wow.
Airspace. You can't fly a drone above 100 feet.
But I mean, I've flown on a hang glider above 100 feet.
Where?
In L.A.,
like over the city of LA, or where?
I mean, over houses and whatnot. And in the hang gliding club, local legend was about a dude who rode the thermals from like northwest LA to all the way down to Palm Springs. I think he made it down. It was like an all day trip or something. But you know, maybe he was violating airspace laws the whole way through. But I was under the impression that. I mean, maybe 6,000 feet was above whatever hard deck or whatever. And certainly being in the airspace of an airport is bad news. You're not allowed to do that.
Per their FAQ, their experience center is in Moore Park, California, 1 hour's drive north of LAX airport.
Which is maybe
how do they answer the
mile.
FAQ of, is it safe? Do they do any wiggle room in that?
Is it safe? We do everything we can to ensure the pilot safety, including be attached at all times to the tether system. We did see that in the video. They have a tether. And a special apparel designed for jetpack operators, reducing the chance of burns.
Reducing the chance of burns! By the way, now I know to add burns to my list of concerns about flying a jetpack.
But apparently insurance does come with the cost of doing this thing.
Well, my next of kin will appreciate that. And lunch and drinks are included.
Ooh, nice.
Oh, yeah. I love this. It is this is big, bold H1 text. It is really safe, all caps. So please don't worry about that, period. We have spent years refining the operation, and you will always be on a safety cable and have an instructor that can take control at any time.
Man, can we just put out a universal memorandum that says, if you feel the need to type in all caps to emphasize how legit you are, don't.
It's like, really
like in safe. 0% yeah. of the time do I see all caps and think, well, that must be true because it's in all caps.
Brian walks in, sets up, they put the pack on him. Jason's got the camera. Bryce has got a camera. Brian pulls out the wire cutters.
So long, suckers! Wow. Yeah, I would imagine when computer-aided guidance gets better and better, I do, all of a sudden I believe, like, what? Well, I'm halfway through this crazy ride if I live to be 90. I guess in my lifetime, I could see an idiot-proof version of this being available.
Yeah. So to do this, it's $5,000 to go do the school. And man, I'm thinking they're like, we don't have any clients today. We got nobody. We need to drum up business. Wally, hint, hint, we're going to go for lunch.
Well, although if you wanted to grab attention, it seems like you dress in a clown costume or a political, hold a political sign or something. Like, I do get the vibe that it sounds like somebody's just out there minding their own business, flying around in a jetpack, according to what we've heard so far.
Bryce, do you want to show them the other stuff they have? Their military speeders.
Do they? I actually don't.
Once you've tasted flight, you will forever walk the earth with your eyes turned skyward, for there you have been, and there you will always long to return.
Leonardo
that doesn't sound very safe.
They've got jetpack, or they've got speeders.
Man, I feel like we've talked about these speeders or something like them before.
Something like them, yeah.
Yeah.
No, we were talking about the ones that would be able to go through like mountainous regions and stuff like that, but they were fairly short range.
Yeah.
These are flying motorcycles.
I feel much safer on a flying motorcycle, weirdly. Number one, more fuel. Number two,
how fast would you drive your wireless motorcycle?
Man, I guess my comfort would be directly proportionate to the amount that I knew computers were doing the heavy lifting on everything. So it says 150 miles an hour max speed. That seems about right. That's
insane.
That's what half the speed of a propeller aircraft can do, like 300, right?
Yeah. 30 minutes flight time.
That's better than, right, I think the one that we were looking at. I think the one we were looking at was 15.
Yeah. Holy cow. Yeah, I'm into it. It's a jet ski for the sky. I don't know where I would go. I don't think they would allow me to go downtown. Well, and that's the only place I would go.
No, but that's what it would be. Like, we are looking at a different version of what super rich people use, like, helicopters for, right? So it's like, when people are going from, like, other parts of LA to downtown LA, or from Manhattan to the Hamptons, stuff like that.
So maybe a 20-mile commute that would normally be an hour and change with traffic suddenly becomes a 10-minute roller coaster ride.
I don't think this is going to be used as a commuter vehicle, but, like, unless you're Brian, and like I just see these poor people at Chick-fil-A as they open up the drive-thru window and the wind is blowing napkins and everything all around this. Oh God, Brian's here.
That's hilarious.
And every single time they make me give my name as if I've never been there every single day. Exactly. I'm the guy cycle. It's always me.
You have to do like these strafing runs through the drive. Brian! Brushwood. Order 4. 63.
Can't stop. Aerodynamics.
Extra sauce.
I have a chicken sandwich for a lot of wind.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Stoics Girl brings up the fact that people complain about e-bikes, electronically powered bikes that go 20 to 30 miles per hour. I believe they're restricted legally to 20 miles an hour, unless you cheat and switch it to kilometers per hour, in which case you get like a couple miles an hour more. But beyond that, they become like electronic motorbikes, which enter a different legal threshold. At least
on that, how fast they can go.
Right, exactly. Like now all of a sudden it's no longer a bicycle that's goosed by electronics. It becomes a motorcycle that is very slow. And that changes the rules.
There's a price on here.
Wait, they're actually selling these?
Well,
yes. Accepting money and selling, while ostensibly the same thing, are not necessarily the same thing.
care to guess the price?
This looks like a half mil. I mean, I'm going to say they're going to say it's a half mil, and they're going to act like it's a half mil, but those first units are going for over a million for sure.
Anybody else? Anybody?
I'll second that.
I'd go. You said 500,000. I would probably go 300,000.
Survey says $380,000 is what they're saying the price would be. This is as of 2018. We don't know.
That seems remarkably cheap. I guess I don't know how much fuel, because it's not electric, right? You would need to gas it?
You'd probably need kerosene, aviation, jet fuel.
Diesel or kerosene. Oh, so I could take this to the Valero, get the diesel.
God, would that be great? You just go swoop it in, you fly down, put it in, get yourself some nerds and some Twizzlers, and then fly off.
I'm a number... I'm at the wireless... helicopter over there.
I just like the idea that you'd have the car alarm beep, like as you walk in, like beep beep.
We have a video of the jetpack aviation, you know, meaning like computer generated video. Yeah, and I apologize. I said it's not for commute, but they show some dude just flying
over. I'm almost
over
certain this is the video that we watched. It must have been a year ago or so.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I think we
remember
the same company from a different vector. I think originally we were entranced by the flying bike, and now we've got the jetpack vector that leads us to the same place.
Wow, yeah, they're showing this through buildings
that's
in a downtown space, and then going. I love the idea because he's like kind of dressed up in this big Marvel flying suit, this kind of like Ant-Man suit. And then stepping from that into like the gym.
Brian, you say confidently it's not going to happen, but what if I said Tom Cruise bought the first one?
Okay. Well, I mean, that dude does what he wants.
That dude
obeys intergalactic law and has a statute of limitations of trillions of years.
There's a second one in this video that is like, storage.
That's the cargo
clearly.
One. Yeah. Because I think we talked about like that's where you pack your lunch and it comes and delivers it to you.
But it looks like a hearse. It looks
it
like
does.
He's
it
got
looks
a
like it's carrying. It does. It's it's got a coffin right built in. That's so funny. Yeah. Mirovina in the chat brings up the noise factor, and I believe that was one of the biggest problems with the perennial flying car, Mahler space car or flying car. Like all the way back into the 60s, Mahler has been trying to do jet-powered cars, but ultimately noise ordinances are just a deal killer. And that and the ability to get government institutions to institute basically lanes for highways in the sky of where you're allowed to go to fly around cities and all that stuff.
Well, we'll see what's going to happen. Like, yeah, I agree. Like, that's the thing that, you know, the whole everybody have a flying car thing kind of falls apart when you think of how loud is one drone. But there can be cases, and you know that's what Uber, and it's hard to know if it's just more of a PR thing because they didn't want to put all the money into like self-driving anymore or not, but Uber has that big push towards the, you know, electric flight.
Yeah, we talked about it was like a hex copter that was big enough to fit one person and it would just jump right across the bay from San Francisco to San Jose or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
which I mean, but it would, the idea there being that you would use the majority of the flight over the water. So you weren't flying over people and you weren't annoying people.
Well, No, the Uber lot of city that wasn't, stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, maybe I'm misremembering, but.
Well, I think that one story, Justin, I remember that as well, but now I'm seeing it looks like a more recent article where it's got more plane looking stuff with propellers.
Yeah, this may be different than, because I also remember the San Francisco one. This may be slightly different.
So okay, if we're voting for, let's kind of rank in terms of our personal excitement. We'll throw Jetpack in there. We'll throw SkyCycle in there. We'll throw Uber Hexcopters or electric puddle jumpers, and we'll throw fully autonomous driving in there. That's the slowest, but the closest and most accessible. Theoretically, the less catastrophic if you get in a wreck. What else should we put in the bin before we rank them? I guess that's sort of the limit of what's realistic, right?
Yeah, right. I mean,
I guess hyperloops, bullet trains or whatever. That's at the bottom for me, because that just seems, I mean, we already have high speed rail and I already don't like that. And that's a real thing that exists right now.
Yeah.
I think that a jetpack thing sounds the coolest in that you just imagine you're flying free. Sounds like a big pain in the butt to me, and it's going to mess up my hair. Same with a SkyCycle. Maybe the Uber thing might be at the top. If there's a flying Uber car, and then second would be an autonomous vehicle. Third would be a sky bike. Fourth would be a jetpack, and fifth would be a high speed magic rail.
Wait, what was your? I'm sorry. What was your order again?
My order was the Uber. Puddle jumping electric skyhopper, because I feel like I could get in wearing a suit and having my hair done and land still with an unruffled suit and my hair done for a fancy meeting. Below that would be an fully autonomous vehicle where I'm reading the Wall Street Journal the whole time. Then below that would be a SkyCycle. Then below that would be the jetpack. And then below that would be the high speed, some kind of hyperloop or high speed rail thing.
Man, future Brian's very fancy.
Yes. Well,
yeah, he's got important meetings, and he's reading the journal.
Like, that's the only that's the only reason I could think of that idea. I mean, otherwise I'm driving the Jeep if I don't give it up.
So this is the one you're most excited about, the order of excitement or likelihood.
Or just in terms of wantiness, and for lack of a better word, that's the one that If I was like, gimme, that's the one I'm most gimme on. Like, you could tell me that all five of these exist today, and the one that I would get on first would be an Uber flying taxi.
Mm-hmm.
What about you guys?
I would take the jetpack first. That would be the best. Like, it's about as functional as anything else, like in terms of you owning a thing and then having to do something with it. But it's like, I can think of a ton of times where I just need to like, meh, jetpack a couple blocks over here. And then, you know, just got to jetpack over there. Like if I'm going to a friend's place, I could just jetpack. So that's number one. Number two, I would say, it's hard because you have to put this in a situation where these are all applied at their best. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which means I would kind of think the best applied version of a hyperloop would be something that'd be very, 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 very helpful. Like being able to get back and forth to LA in, you know, a fraction of the time would put me in LA. It would make LA just a part of my life more than it would otherwise. And that's probably going to effectively change my life a little bit more than being able to jetpack to the Wendy's, which is what my imagination is for that. So I put that second. Third, I would say the speeder, just because it's kind of like the jetpack thing, but a little bit bulkier. And then autonomous cars, we mostly have it now. Boring.
Yeah, the rail, I totally agree with your justification, but just when I think of any kind of hyperloop or rail, I just think other people. And that sort of dampens everything for me, which is weird because I'm down with flying everywhere and I don't mind that. But there's sort of this code of everybody pretending that nobody else is on the plane.
Well, remember, too, part of that is it's so fast. It's not like airplane flight wait length time. It'd be faster in theory and best implementation.
Yeah.
And the thing that excites me, like if you said, oh, if I woke up tomorrow, what do I think would be the best for everybody? Like if you had, if you could get the legit, like it's going to get, everybody understand, we understand all the complications and a lot more. But if we woke up tomorrow, like, yeah, no, we got this tunneling system. We can build it cheap. We figured this out. We can build these loops. Think about like, we live where we live because often, you know, we want to be because of work or opportunity, et cetera. And if you could, like Justin said, like, oh, if I could hyperloop between here and, you know, San Francisco and Oakland, like that makes like, you know, my current job would make it a lot easier. If all of a sudden you could build suburbs in Nevada, you know, across the county line and be able to live and work in LA or travel places, when you take all this, all these places that are like, there's nothing there for another reason that it's just, it's not near anywhere, but you can all of a sudden connect it with 100 miles of loop. You can create entire new kinds of cities, entire new opportunities and stuff.
Do you think there ever gets to be a level of efficiency with a hyperloop that you could do nutty things like, I guess you could just set up a tanker of, I mean, people already drive semis filled with water to deliver to remote locations where it doesn't make sense to drill a well. So you could just in the middle of the desert, have your place, just get, you know, 10,000 gallons of water delivered every few weeks and,
or build a pipeline from some place that has an aquifer and not a lot of people, or build it where there's aquifers or what. I mean, yeah, I think that you absolutely, it becomes so much because when you have the ability to move people and things long distances for very, very inexpensive, you know, the reason California exists the way it does today is because of rail. Without the railway, wouldn't be the way it is. Once you had rail and you could just lay tracks between the East Coast and the West Coast, you look at what it was like before rail, right? And like, you know, the Oregon Trail, nightmare. Once you put rail, step change. West Coast, you know, there's a great book, which I maybe put that as my pick about, called Astoria, which was about the plan to try to develop a separate country on the West Coast, kind of like, you know, a sibling of the United States, you know, and that, you know, the idea of, and this was the thing, the way they sort of thought about things before you had railway, you know, effective, you know, rail, because like there's so, you had mountains and you had seas and all these things that pulled you apart.
You very know, cool.
40 years later, kind of the 50, 60, the world started to change the way we looked at things.
Yeah, I guess, so. I guess what I'm wrestling with my top five in order is, you and I have talked about Rory Sutherland's book, Alchemy, where it's like distance becomes time, but mm-hmm. how you spend your time is different. In a jetpack, you're not also playing Pokemon Go, although in a Uber magical hexcopter, you might.
I would put like if Hyperloop is the way it's envisioned was there, I put it there. Then the next one is your copter, because I see getting downtown, whatever. Like I would love to walk across the street, heliport, and have an Uber come pick us up and take us, fly us somewhere, you know, 50 miles north, whatever. And I think that opens up some of the opportunities in a way that like Hyperloop would. You know, the problem is that Hyperloop allows you to have far more people going back and forth faster. But even,
and I guess also they're solving two different problems. The hexcopter Uber thing would be that last mile journey where there's a lot of twists and turns and parking is scarce or whatever. Whereas city to city Hyperloop is going to be, you know,
well,
a literal.
Yeah. When I brought this up before, and it was just, you know, when Kobe Bryant and everybody else, lost their life on the helicopter crash, that was a regular commute, like between LAX and this place called Calabasas, which is far to the north of LA, but you can have nice big mansions there and have big space there. There are people who make that commute, real wealthy people, straight if they got to work in downtown LA or whatever, but they can go hop on a helicopter, fly over 2 hours of traffic and be home. The world is very different for you when you can get from point A to point B faster.
Right. Yeah, we as is evidenced by the fact that I spent like 3 months in LA and we never saw each other because we were 10 yeah. whole miles apart in LA.
Yeah, it's
no, that's for real. You want to know what else is for real? The support that you can give us at patreon.com/weirdthings. Head on over there right now. Get your custom RSS feed. Put it into the podcatcher of your choice. And get the After Things podcast, where we talk about being an entrepreneur, making things happen. It's all there for you, friends. patreon.com/weirdthings.
So kind of cool news, I think it's cool, coming out of San Diego Zoo, is they took cells from a 40-year-old deep freeze of a horse, an endangered horse, Prince Zwalski's horse, which I guess has gone extinct in the wild, and they're actually able to clone it.
Wow. Is this the first cloning to bring back a extinct species? I'm certain that I've heard stories, maybe I'm making this up, I believe I've heard about a species that had gone extinct and they had frozen eggs that they were able to finally cook and make them come back. But is,
well, again, it's an endangered, so not extinct, but it depends probably what we categorize. Cause probably we've probably revitalized cells or things like this on a microorganism level, on a larger level. I don't know, but this is this funky looking kind of cool horse that basically, I think they put it into, use a regular, horse to help carry it. But
even if it's a different breed, an animal can gestate somebody close enough to them as long as it doesn't trigger rejection response. In fact, yeah. 20 years ago, I remember some Discovery special suggesting that to bring back the woolly mammoth, you would kind of hybridize it with an elephant and increasingly select for more woolly mammoth traits, and then eventually that's pretty much a woolly mammoth.
And this one, the idea is to, this one's a full clone, but as Brian's saying, if you want to get to something that's a little bit genetically different, you might create your hybrid first and then from there clone, have that carry the clone.
So it's been a minute since I've paid attention to the methods of cloning. The way I remember is that they Dolly the sheep, 25 years ago, they took, if I remember correctly, the nucleus containing the DNA of an adult cell and put it in an embryo cell, and you get a lot of whoopsie doodles on that. You get a lot of critters that are born with all kinds of genetic difficulties. But of those that are genetically viable, their offspring tend to be sort of like threaded stock that are safe. I remember there was a Wired article that I read several years back with the headline, "You have almost certainly eaten cloned meat." And mm-hmm. it talked about how in the cattle trade, basically they would clone really, really good beef stock. And then the clones themselves were kind of a mixed bag, but any that could reproduce were okay to eat.
Yeah, there's one of the problems that we encountered was that for some animals, there's a lot of information that's on, there's a thing called methylation, which is there's DNA, and on the surface of the DNA, you actually have these little protein sequences that can carry extra data, which is just sort of like kind of an addendum, it's kind of a patch, so to speak. And that was one of the problems that they realized, when they first, some of the cloning was the DNA was right, but we still don't know how to copy methylation. And that's been the limiting on some animals, because there's a lot more data on the methylation, which controls the growth of things like muscles and stuff.
I just realized how far over my head I've gotten myself. So I'm going to say good on that horse for having more babies.
Kurt the horse. His name is Kurt.
What a stud.
What a stud.
The Wikipedia definition for our word of the day is methylation. So DNA methylation is a biological process by which methyl groups are added to the DNA molecule. Methylation can change the activity of a DNA segment without changing the sequence. When located in a gene promoter, DNA methylation typically acts to repress gene transcription. So that's, remember when you saw the super muscular cow or something like that?
Oh, yeah. It looked like a Mr. Universe of a cow.
Yeah, and that probably was, if I remember, was a case of methylation. They didn't have the thing to say, stop growing muscles at this point. Dude, you're buff. You look great. You're great.
Yeah.
So it's tricky, but there are ways. One of the ways that we might be able to do now is that we have we've discovered like optical properties like negative index of refraction, which actually means be able to like, you can basically image things like on a molecule sort of size. So you might be able to take the DNA from an organism, look at the surface of it, see what the methylation is. And then when you copy it, be able to maybe at some point be able to copy the methylation to, or basically add it to the surface or do something to that effect.
Wow. That's insane.
So, of course, Tally Sorrell, the smart contingent here is telling us like,
it is a little bit, it's a little bit intimidating for us to do our horse apples, pseudoscience, the paranormal, the fringes of science show in front of a literal brain scientists who are geniuses.
Yeah. So she asked, am I talking atomic force microscopy or total internal reflection? This would be, this would probably be, the latter, not the former. This was just a theoretical thing like 8 years ago. Like, I don't even know if it's in the lab yet, but it was one of the, I had a friend that was working at one of the Gates Institute grants. And I was talking about this sort of thing. Like, oh yeah, we just, cause it was just, there was a paper that came out like a couple of months before. I'm like, ah, have you looked at this? Can you do it for this? Like, yeah, we're looking into that. Cool. But I don't know. I haven't followed up to know where that is, but it's just to show you that things we thought we couldn't image, we might be able to, and that's cross disciplines. Great is sometimes somebody goes, yeah, can't solve this. And then, it was my crazy favorite example is like DSL works because we figure like, it's too noisy. Well, we can send a signal through and measure how noisy the signal is and then take that away. Cool. Oh, we can't see through this atmospheric laser, this atmospheric layer to go look at like stars. Well, we can do a thing like DSL where we shoot a laser and see how it distorts and subtract it. Helps to an extent, but just...
You just reminded me of, I believe it was over the last week, there was some article headline that I read that Betelgeuse is not nearly as far away as we thought and not nearly as big as we thought and not nearly as close to exploding as we hoped, because we all wanted to see a cool rad-ass supernova in our lifetimes, and it looks like it may be 100,000 years till that happens.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing, is we've talked briefly about this before, about how we're realizing some stars are like orders like 20% closer than we thought they were before, because our ways of measuring things by magnitude, etc., is imprecise.
Yeah, I don't know how to feel about it. I guess fine. It's good to have Betelgeuse around. It's one of the stars of the show, so to speak, in the winter night sky. But that was always my favorite part of giving a sky tour, was mentioning that Betelgeuse was thought to potentially go supernova in our, like it's cooked and ready to start popping like a popcorn. But apparently that's not the case. It's farther. It's closer and smaller.
Well. Cool.
and by the way, whether it's at the old thought to be distance or the new confirmed distance, even if it goes supernova, that's not going to be a problem for us. It'll just be a cool show.
I just imagine Brian late at night in bed. Bonnie, like, what's the matter? It's Betelgeuse. I just can't. I'm worried about the star.
She's like, Brian, your Betelgeuse is fine. It's fine. It doesn't have to be that big or that far away. It's okay.
You guys want to do picks?
Yeah, man.
Sure.
Justin and I talked about this a little bit last week on Happy Hour, but I finally subscribed to HBO Max because I already had it for free and didn't know it. Because pro tip, if you have AT&T for any of your internet provider stuff, you have HBO Max for free, because AT&T owns HBO. But once I got in there, and as Justin put it, after pillaging city after city of content having COVID, I finally have a new city to ransack. And so I watched the movie Class Action Park, the documentary about Action Park up in Vernon, New Jersey. I'm really curious what it looks like to people who had never been to Action Park. I spent one day there when I was teaching magic at a camp up in upstate New York, and that was the big trip. I did fully 2/3 of everything they mention on the show. I was like, yeah, I remember that. I was there. I did that one. I saw that one. I was scared of that one. And yes, that's exactly how it was. Weirdly, no exaggeration. Everything they said of like, yep, that's exactly what Action Park was like, and that's exactly how I remember it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I would be curious though what it looks like to somebody who has not been there.
Awesome. Yeah. I only saw commercials for it, but it certainly is, especially for people that grew up in the Northeast, a cultural touchstone. Like they, everybody of a certain age remembers Action Park. My pick is a book called The Big Picture. It came out 2 years ago, but it is a narrative based around the Sony hacks. So the author attempts to kind of tell the big story of how Hollywood has morphed over the past 20 years with the like totally unprecedented X-ray into a studio that has not caught up with the big franchises and was attempting to do so in Sony. So far, it's pretty good. I'm listening to the audiobook. There's a little bit of filler on it, and it includes one of my favorite things. If you are a voracious audiobook reader, then you will understand that there are these certain moments where the readers of the audiobook, pleasant, amazing voices and great performers that they are, oftentimes either them or the editor understand the little eccentricities that make a story what it is. Two of my favorite Hall of Fame examples are in a book about ESPN. They're talking about the legendary SportsCenter jingle, which ends da 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 da. And in reading the audiobook, the guy just had no clue how to do it and obviously had never heard the SportsCenter jingle. So we just go, na 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 na. Na 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 na. There was also another one about the military that didn't understand the Marine greeting of hoo-ah. Like, and so it's just like as they gave their traditional hoo-ha greeting. And similarly in this book, there is just constant reference to the studio Warner Bros.
Okay, I was about to ask you about that because I'm like, I've never read that and heard in my mind anything other than Warner Brothers abbreviated.
Written as Warner Brothers, I have never heard Warner Bros. Said out loud. But it's just one of those things that it just seems like, oh, I get it. If I had never really cared about this stuff, and it's you read what's on the page, and it's always written as Warner Bros. Period, right? But it's always referred to as either WB or Warner Brothers. So so far so good. I'm at what was described to me as the reason why the book is special, and that is kind of the development of After Earth, the Will Smith vehicle, and what they expected it to be, and the decline of star power in general in Hollywood in favor of franchises and content. But so far so good.
In the audiobook version, because I'm also listening to it, he does one of my favorite things, which normally you only hear the author of the book kind of editorialize or give anything other than the written words on the page. And when you do, it's awesome. Like, I remember Arnold Schwarzenegger does this. Or I know Adam Carolla does this. I know that Kevin Smith did it in his book. It's where they get to a part of the book where something is written, and then they just break character and they describe it. And so in the Arnold Schwarzenegger version, he's reading everything and then he goes like, all right, so at this part, it is a big legal document and that it says stuff like this. But if you read down the line, it says F-U-C-K. And then it's very funny. Anyway, and then he goes back to reading. But this book, it's just an audiobook reader. It's not the author, but he sort of adds some chuffing laughter here and again where it's like he'll say a sentence and go like I'm just like, who gave him that direction? It's really weird.
Good story, and also it's a good primer on Marvel, because Marvel and Netflix are kind of like the ascendant powers as they are discussing Sony and some of the other studios, Marvel and the fight between exactly how they went into their own movie business, how they sold to Disney is cool and interesting.
They also, the same thing that is a problem in the part that you're reading right now, kind of the death of the mid-level star vehicle. They they reverse when they talk about how Netflix saved mid-level, mid-budget movies, and then also how Amazon went out of their way to own, you know, the indie art house experience, even though it's in every way the exact opposite of the place that you buy toilet paper from.
Yeah. No, it's good stuff.
I got a pick. I just started playing a new video game, and it's a sci-fi game. And I think it's really interesting. You know, the things that I really am drawn to with sci-fi stuff, I do like time travel stories and stories about, you know, multiple timelines. And this game that I found just over this past weekend has all of that and much, much more. It's from Atlas and Vanillaware. Vanillaware known for making these really beautiful, almost looking like they're hand-painted graphics. It's called 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim. It is a mixture of like a top-down real-time strategy game and also these hand-painted narrative scenes that you are interacting with and making decisions with. It's really interesting. I'm like 6 or 7 hours into it, and I think that's about a quarter of the way through. I think it's really interesting in that it has a lot of main characters, and also it has a very clear delineation between all of this action strategy stuff that you're doing and all of the narrative stuff. And I haven't figured out, I haven't played enough of the narrative to know why these two things are so separate, right? You would think like, okay, well, in a game like this, you would do stuff and then you would fight and do stuff and you'd kind of go back and forth like this, where here this is almost completely up to the player of how much you want to do of any one thing at any one time. And I think it's fascinating. There's a lot of time travel and UFOs and kaiju are the big enemy force. I don't want to talk too much about the specifics of it because I don't know how much of it is a spoiler and how much of it is just the stuff that they tell you in the first few hours of the game. But I think it's really, really interesting and does a good job of making the story stuff feel a little interactive, so you're not just reading and or having all the stuff read to you, and making the gameplay stuff feel really accessible. Like, I don't play a lot of real-time strategy games, and this feels very, very approachable. So, I don't know. It's on the PS4 now. 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim.
Right on.
Cool.
Andrew?
I'm going to double down on the book Astoria. Again, it's a great sort of story about exploration and what could have been. It would be a wonderful source for a alt history sort of thing. This is right at the founding of America, the idea of trying to create this other, to basically Astoria is like Astoria, Oregon, which was going to be the capital of this other country. And, you know, had the blessing of like, I think Jefferson, et cetera, to go off and try to do this thing. And it just ran into, there are just a couple things that sort of fell apart. Had they not, American history could have been radically different. You know, I mean, literally a canoe's worth of supplies or things like this could have had a huge impact. So I just really loved the book. And a great example, too, like the more we go back and read about what it was like in 1800, 1810s, 1820s, things like this, it's helpful. And also, like, you know, we talk about today, you know, politics, it's horrible. How many people got shot in duels in front of the, you know, the Capitol building? Like, it hasn't happened in months, as far as I know. So.
I do have that moment when people talk about this is an unprecedented era in political history in America. Never have we been more divided. I'm like, I can think of one time we were a little bit more divided. A little bit more divided.
Yeah. And even at the Capitol structure, it's like, yeah, I can't believe they said this on Twitter or they said this back. I'm like, yeah, you know, 200 years ago, they'd be out with guns shooting at each other.
Yeah.
Nice.
And we'd be cool. They'd be like, yeah, a little bit, really, guys. But that, you got to do what you got to do. You know, the trusty duel.
So how much of this Astoria book is not fictionalized,
narrative?
But, yeah. How much of it is like zhuzhed up, or is this more really a historical document?
Really historical, very, okay. Very historical. This group went through there, and from letters from there, we know this. So-and-so had said this later on. So it's not a, you know, and he thought to himself, you know, as he died alone in his cabin with nobody to remember his thoughts ever. It's not that. It is very much pulling up, because a lot of letters, a lot of stuff back and forth. So I enjoyed it. And it's just a really good reminder of, like, as you fly, you know, as you fly from the East Coast to the West Coast or vice versa, you know, as you, you know, you're thrown in the sky, as it's called, you just, you know, like a god, and you think, like, you know, just a couple generations ago, very different.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. It's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.